The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Announcement, or just a little discussion. Usually on Mondays I sit on this platform low. Some of you have been here Sunday, see it's up high. But lately I've been sitting without a cushion, without one of these round cushions, so I don't sit as high as I used to. And I felt like I was so low I couldn't see anyone. Yeah, some of you nodding yes. Is this better?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, in some ways, maybe. For years, I was very reluctant to sit on a platform. Actually, back in the old days, I kind of resisted for a long time having a platform at all. And then they got me this platform that was this high. And I kind of, okay. And then some years ago, they said, you know, you have to, on Sunday mornings, you have to sit higher. And I resisted that. So maybe I'm getting corrupted. But the I kind of, you know, I have this idea that sitting high is a little bit more haughty or something, and that Dharma teachers should sit on the ground. But then people don't hear me or don't see me, and I don't see them. So sitting here today so low, I felt this is too low. So is this okay? Yeah, I should get over my resistance. Okay. So, is first, is it loud enough, everyone? Is it good? A little bit louder? So let's see, is this better? Okay, so I believe the main point that I want to make this evening is that what we think about and our relationship to our thoughts is state dependent. So depending on the state of mind that we're in, we think certain ways. Depending on the state of mind we're in, we have particular relationships with our thoughts. And I thought of talking about this because I read recently an article that mentioned thinking, and they had this claim that most people, their default way of thinking, the most common way people have of thinking, is negative thinking. Now, I don't know if that's true, but certainly there's a good amount of negative thinking going on in this world of ours. And but the article, the way I read the article, it was like, you know, it's almost like this is who we really are at the bottom, like we're just like negative thinkers. And that didn't seem right to me, because what I've learned is that what we think and how we think is very much dependent on the mood we're in, but also the state of mind, how concentrated we are, how settled we are on ourselves. And so one of the things we learn to do in meditation and mindfulness practice is not just learn to be mindful of things, but also our state of being, our state of our mind shifts and changes. And there are better states to be in than some of the states that keep negative thinking going, spinning and spinning. And I think we need some help with the mic, with the hearing system device. Looks like someone's getting another one for you. Let's wait, so everyone's on together here. Do you hear me in that one? It's coming through that one? Is anybody else having a hearing system device?
I do.
Is it working? Yeah? It's working for you?
Mine was on C, and we had to change it.
What's it on now?
D. It's on.
So someone knows how to help put it on D. So let's see, is that working now? Great. There are no interruptions in mindfulness practice. So, so the relationship to our thinking. In thinking about this today, I was thinking that sometimes a metaphor for thinking that's used is that of a train, and you come to the, you know, you're at the train crossing, and a train is coming by, and maybe a freight train with open wagons, and then you find yourself, you have jumped in, and the train takes you off. So we have all kinds of thoughts that come through, and they come through like trains, and sometimes we get on them, and they can carry us away quite far. But to stretch this analogy, those trains, the track they're on, is in a huge circle, and they're on a carousel. And the trains are moving, but the carousel is spinning. And if you stop the train, the carousel is still spinning. And if the carousel is spinning in such a way that you get dizzy, it doesn't really help you. Or if the carousel is spinning in such a way that it makes you afraid, then you might want to jump back on new trains and get the trains going again to get out of there. But, you know, getting out of there means just go around and around on the carousel some more, just faster. And but if you can stop the carousel, then the whole situation changes. For one thing, the trains are not going to go so fast anymore because part of their speed around and around depends on how fast the carousel is going. So what is the carousel that you're on that your trains of thoughts are spinning on, going around and around? And can you stay on a carousel that's going slow or a carousel that's being still, and you can, from which vantage point you can watch the thoughts go around and around, the trains go around and around, without jumping on them? So to try to explain this a little bit better, if we're afraid, then we might have thoughts about how to make ourselves safe, or thoughts about how, you know, concerns and look out for what's dangerous out there. And that's quite reasonable if there's really a danger there. But our thoughts then might tell us, if we're afraid, tell us that there's more dangers out there than there really are. As we see and think about dangers or potential dangers, then we get into a problem-solving mode, and we start thinking more about how do I deal with this danger, and are there more dangers out there, and what should I do, and how should I plan ahead? And those thoughts of danger and solving the problems of danger and fixing ourselves begin spinning and spinning and spinning. And they can pull us into their orbit so that we're just kind of spinning around in those thoughts a lot. And if we try to just quiet those thoughts down, if the underlying fear is still there, we'll find ourselves probably being pulled up into those thoughts again and again. But if we're trying to solve certain problems in the thought trains that are spinning and spinning, sometimes there's no way out. There is no solution in there. But we think there is, so we keep thinking them and thinking them. There's another way, and that is to go behind the thoughts or under the thoughts and address the underlying fuel, the underlying mood or the emotion, or in this case, the fear that's there, and settle that. And if that fear is settled, is quieted down, then our thinking is not going to be driven by the fear. And chances are is that we can think much more clearly about things, we can plan more clearly, more realistically, and probably our thinking won't be a loop where we keep spinning back over and over and over again, not being able to take care of ourselves. an example of that I was reminded of recently, of someone who doesn't know how to take care of themselves because they're caught up in their kind of spinning out and feeling uncomfortable, are toddlers who really need to sleep. And I don't know how all toddlers are, but we had at least one toddler who didn't know that he needed to go to sleep. And he would just get more and more energized, you know, and like, you know, it was like getting out of control. And there was no solution there except crashing or somehow managing to get him to bed and read a story and, you know, somehow. But, you know, he didn't think he had to go to sleep because, he was all this energy because he was so uncomfortable being so tired. So there's a ways in which our thinking is self-perpetuating and self-driven. And certain negative thoughts, negative ways of thinking, have this tendency to be self-perpetuating. They kind of feed on themselves. And sometimes it's very hard to get out of them if we're playing the game on their terms. If we're trying to address the problems, certain problems, by thinking about them, but the thinking has been influenced too much by the fear, driven by the fear, then the thinking might not be productive and useful. It might actually keep us spinning and spinning around and around. If we can get calm and settled and relaxed, and we're not so identified or involved with our thinking, and we can feel at home here, contented here, at ease here, the nature of our thinking tends to change. For one thing, one of the important changes is we don't identify with thoughts so much. We don't live in the thoughts. We don't take up residence in thinking and what we're doing. And I think many people, their residence, where they tend to live most of their life, is in their thoughts about things. Thinking about planning, remembering, doing all these things. And if that's all someone has known for many, many years, the idea there's an alternative is inconceivable. Why would anybody do that? And all the promise in life seems to come at the end of the thoughts, or the thoughts are, you know, leading to, or all the safety we're going to get come when we just finally be able to figure it out through our thoughts how to get safe. Or all the desires we have, you know, somehow get fulfilled, or somehow there's the allure or the promise that if we just keep thinking about them, then somehow it'll manifest. And so the pull into the world of thinking is very, very strong. And then because it's so strong, the idea that one wouldn't think so much, wouldn't be living in the thoughts so actively, would seem like, well, not only would it feel, I mean, we would think that it's not helpful, because how can you solve the problems that need to be solved if we're not thinking about them? But also it doesn't feel like it's going to be a solution to not be so involved in thinking. Because a lot of thinking can be driven by discomfort. And if we're stopping to think, then one of the things we might feel is the discomfort that's underneath it, that's driving it. And there's a wide kinds of discomforts that we can feel. I've mentioned fear. There could be dissatisfaction. There could be loneliness. There can be discouragement. There can be, there's a whole long list of things. But as we kind of switch gears and be willing to feel and sense what's going on underneath, then we're addressing what's primary. And what I've learned over my lifetime of practice is that for the most part, thoughts are secondary. Thoughts about how I live my life and my concerns are really kind of more like symptoms than they are the essence of what our life is about. And they're symptoms of what's really going on more deeply. And so if there's a lot of negative thinking going on, catastrophe thinking going on, a lot of generalizations going on, lot of negative thinking going on, chances are that underneath that, there is some kind of discomfort that's percolating or driving or running the show. That's what needs our attention. It's funny to keep saying what I think in a talk about thoughts, but I think of my thinking as kind of like a flag that's waving at Gil, saying, Gil, pay attention over here. But you don't pay attention to the flag. You pay attention to the, you know, what's holding the flag, what's driving the flag, what's waving the flag. And so if we're always looking at the thoughts and concerned with what we're thinking about, then we're going to miss the messenger. We're going to miss what's underneath it, what's driving it. So one of the things we learn to do in mindfulness practice is to step back from our thinking, to not give it a lot of authority, to not invest a lot of importance in our thoughts, not to dismiss them, not to belittle them, but we don't have to live on the train all the time. There's other places to live. And if we think being on the train is the only thing that's important, then we're going to always want to be on the train. But that's not such a great life to always be on the train. It's kind of like living in a two-dimensional reality when there's a three-dimensional reality waiting for you. So for some people, the entryway into this deeper kind of sense of self, deep experience of being, comes from shifting attention away from our thoughts to what's underneath them, what's driving them, what's fueling them. And if that is discomfort, then the art of mindfulness is to learn how to be comfortable with the discomfort, how to be willing to feel it. And we feel it kind of as if it's the jack in the jackbox. As long as that little doll, jack doll, is in the box with the spring's going to be taut and ready to just unloosen. The tension is there. But once we take the lid off the box and the spring releases, then the tension goes away. So a lot of this deeper psychological discomfort we have inside is a little bit like a jack in the box, that it needs to be space to unwind, needs space to kind of flow and to release some of the tension that's underneath it. So one of the ways we do that is we feel it. We're present for what's underneath it, what's there. And we learn to shift our attention away from living in thoughts to living something which is more intimate, more connected here, how we feel in a deeper way. As we learn to make space for that and settle into that, then what can happen is the mind begins to quiet down. Because then the energy of the discomfort, the fears, the anxieties, the desires, the dissatisfactions we have, are not feeding the thoughts and keeping them spinning. So the thoughts are not getting much more energy anymore, and they tend to quiet down. As thoughts quiet down, then we start, it's possible to notice there's actually a lot of things to be aware of in this life that are not thoughts. It's possible to be aware of the world around us in a more vivid way, in a clearer way. It's possible to be aware of our inner life in a more vivid way, in a clearer way. It's possible to be aware of our emotions and feelings. It's possible to be aware of reservoirs of calm and peacefulness and well-being that's within, waiting for us. As we get more concentrated and settled and peaceful, what tends to happen is the nature of our thinking changes. And it tends to, our thinking stops being so negative, so fear-driven. It starts to be driven by a sense of peacefulness or calmness or a sense of well-being, confidence, contentment, a whole bunch of other things that become the kind of the food for how we're thinking. And the thinking becomes more satisfying. And what some people have pointed out is that thinking becomes much more creative when we have a calm, settled, contented mind. And having creative thoughts is a much more useful way to solve problems. I can't tell you how many problems I've tried to think my way out of, try to solve, and I've spent days and days sometimes with some kind of preoccupation, some concern, thinking about it. Kind of a certain kind of tension operating. And then something happened where I was distracted from my concern in a nice way. I went for a walk in the woods, I went, you know, did some kind of exercise or did something different. And in this alternate kind of state of being, my mind on its own popped up some ideas, some creative solutions, something what to do next. And I said it that way, my mind had those thoughts. And what was happening, those days I spent thinking about my problem, I was thinking. Can you see the difference? And it turns out that for a good percentage of at least me, but I think for a fair number of people, that one of the things that's spinning and fueling the incessant thoughts, the way we get hooked in and caught in, is that a lot of those trains have me written on them. You know, trains going by fast, it just says me, 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 me. Because it's an amazing amount of thoughts that people think that one way or the other, we're the subject of the thoughts. We're like the main character. And it's, you know, that's a pretty interesting person for you. And so we get hooked. And we get hooked and we start thinking me thoughts. And there can be this wonderful looping of perpetuation, of perpetuating me thoughts. Once you have a me, you have to keep the me going. You have to fix the me, improve the me, protect the me, do all these things with the poor me. But you don't have to be on the me train. You can just be. You can be on the be train rather than the me train. So the point I was trying to say is that how people think and our relationship to thoughts is state specific or is dependent on the state that we're in. And sometimes we want to tend to our state of being before we get involved in thinking too much about things. Because if we can change our state from one that's anxious or tense to one that's confident and relaxed, then our thinking becomes much more useful, much more creative. There tends to be less me in the thinking. And so part of the function of mindfulness is to help you with this switch. Help us to disidentify with our thoughts just enough that we're not living in the thoughts only. The trains can still operate and we can get on and off sometimes, but it's very different to have control over when you get on a train and when you get off than if you're just on the train and you have no idea how to get off. All you can do is move to the next compartment. You know, and that's still on the train. So those were the thoughts I had for today. And if they made sense, maybe you had some questions for me. If those my thoughts didn't make any sense for you, maybe you have some questions.
Sometimes I feel the underlying thing, and the thing still spins. It doesn't stop.
So the underlying emotion or feeling spins and spins and spins, doesn't stop?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a few things about that. There's a feedback loop between our thoughts and this underlying state that's anxiety or fear that's there. So one of the things to become aware of is if you can, is what that loop might be. Are you, even though it doesn't, the underlying feelings might not just stop, can you see how your thoughts, so they affect your thoughts, but your thoughts in return affect that state. Can you see that connection? Sometimes just seeing that connection can begin creating space where things can quiet down a little bit. That's one way. The other thing is sometimes the underlying state that doesn't stop, if it's very difficult or just uncomfortable, sometimes it needs other things than mindfulness. So sometimes it needs compassion or kindness or support. Sometimes it needs support from other people before we can really do it on our, do it ourselves. So I think that as we get bit more and more familiar with the underlying state that you're talking about doesn't stop, sometimes you want to maybe check in and talk to other people and really kind of consider what's really needed here for this that might be more than just the kind of mindfulness you're able to bring.
Hi, I'm just wondering, when you, I'm following this analogy, when you get off of the me train and you are on a platform, I can get off of the me train, but I'm on the platform watching the trains going with the rush of them passing and so on. And I, have you ever been lost in that space and not known what to do when it's like I'm off of the me train? But in that those moments of, am I here? Am I somewhere? Where am I? This it's all mm-hmm. becomes unfamiliar. Is there mm-hmm. a way that you have oriented yourself in, I don't know, along your practice or at times in your practice to be like, is this real? Is this happening? And to have faith and trust in it or something?
Yeah, I don't think I've had that particular experience, so I can't speak to it directly. But I can well understand that sometimes it's quite disorienting, the transition from getting off the train and just watching the energy of it spin, go, 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 because it's the momentum because it's, is there. It's not going to stop right away. And some people orient themselves to their lives, orient themselves how to find their way safely around the world by their thoughts and ideas that they have. And if that, if they're not orienting themselves through those, and not grounding themselves in a sense in those, then it can be disorienting for a while until there's a transition. And probably it's like caffeine. And so it takes a few days. once you stop taking that caffeine, you know, doing the caffeine. And so you have to give yourself the time. And that's why sometimes doing something like a retreat, retreats are kind of like a thought recovery center. And but certainly I've had times. The closest thing that I can think of that I have that you described is sometimes I can't stop my thoughts. There's a lot of momentum in my thoughts, and I'm not troubled by it, but it's like wow. And that's what I practice. I found it very helpful for me to practice wow. Wow. That's amazing. Wow. Who would have guessed? Wow. And if I can really say wow, really kind of step back and go, wow, look at that. That's amazing. I'm out of control. then I'm kind of in control. I've kind of stepped away. I'm not identified. And sometimes the pull into the thoughts are quite strong. But if I go, wow. But I have to keep doing it. Wow. In those moments of wow, I am not locked on. I'm not pulled in. It's a way of stepping back and not being caught in it. So you might try the wow perspective. It's a quiet group. The group has no thoughts. I think someone's coming from the outer hall.
Hi. Hello. I have a question, and I think I might know the answer to this, but right now I'm feeling a lot of emotions but don't have thoughts tied to them specifically. Uh-huh. And that's, so I understand the thought train, but now I'm on the emotion train, and I don't know how to like navigate through that. If I don't know what the root of the emotion is, then I don't. Do you have thoughts on that? Or emotions on
yeah.
that?
I think that I don't always know why I have the emotions I do. And sometimes there's a momentum there, or there's something's been unreleased or uncovered or something, and it's kind of there. And I think of all emotions having a lifetime. And sometimes the lifetime is shorter than what I want, and sometimes the lifetime is longer than what I want. But it's not, I'm not in charge so much of the lifetime sometimes. So some of the things to learn to do when the emotions are there that are not understandable, and when it's, you know, like why it's there or any particular reason or cause, is to respect them a lot, make room for them, and try be so aware of them, know that they're there, so that they're not the perspective through which you're seeing the world. And one of the ways to try to help with that is try not to make any big decisions, you know, or come to conclusions if the emotions have the upper hand. And if you need to make conclusions, then you might want to preface what you're going to say. You know, I have this really this particular emotion today. I'm really grumpy today. Like occasionally I've done that. I've told people, you know, I'm grumpy today. And then it's easier for me if I say it, because then I'm not so identified. For me, when I make it public, I'm not so identified with it. It's kind of like it frees it up inside of me. And so those are thoughts that I have for you. I don't know if they relate to what you're, unless you want to ask again or a different way or more specifically.
No, the approach I've been taking is to accept and sort of feel it and feel what it feels like in the body. And that's what, you know, the last meditation was about for me. And then just investigate and see where it's coming from and try to invite that insight.
Sure. Sounds good.
But I don't, I don't know. It's on the one hand, the cause of the emotion is external, and I understand it very clearly that it's an external thing. But then, on the other hand, it's, you know, the emotion wouldn't be there unless I had an internal interpretation of that external thing that happened, and that's that connection I'm trying to figure out, because I don't quite.
So there's a kind of a maybe subtle or not so subtle distinction that's sometimes made in Buddhism, that maybe is helpful here. That rather than thinking that the cause of the emotion is external, and Buddhism's tendency is to see that the condition for it is external. But if there's a cause, the cause is within. One thing I've had success with emotional states that I couldn't understand, sometimes I couldn't even identify what it was, but I was just there, was I spent a lot of time doing mindfulness of the body around it. So really feeling in the body, connecting to where in the body it's most energized by the emotional state. And then if I hang out with it long enough, and occasionally what's happened is that the underlying reason was there. The underlying belief, the underlying assumption, the underlying kind of something deeper. And as soon as I realize, oh, then something lifts. But the doorway to that understanding is not from thinking, but is really connecting to the body and feeling into it, and then something can happen.
I think at the beginning you mentioned, I'm here.
There.
Okay. Yeah. At the beginning you mentioned something about states of mind or that are influencing the thought train. And could you elaborate a little there? Yeah.
So, well, this is what comes to mind. So I don't know if it addresses the question, but it's a story from my life. When I was 14, I met a girl. It happens sometimes for 14-year-olds. Maybe, and I, you know, was very much attracted to her. And so in my attraction, all I could do was think about her. So the state of being attracted or having fallen in love, you know, that was all that, you know, was my thoughts were really in how wonderful she was and special she was and the best one and this is the one and, you know, all these thoughts. And it was quite strong because I knew her first name. And I knew her what street she lived on. That's all. So my friend and I, we got two telephone books, and we went through one from the front and one from the back, and called everyone who lived on those streets, asking for her. my actions, my thoughts, what was driving me, was being fueled by a particular state. That lasted about 2 days. By day three, it was like, who, what? Does that explain a little bit that example, the idea of a state that affects our thinking?
Yeah, a little bit.
Little bit.
An alternate state example would probably shed more light too.
Oh, and
completely different state example.
So I could go for having a good night's sleep. I can have a nice breakfast. I could come to IMC in the morning and meditate and just have a sweet, very nice meditation, feel happy. I could be walking down the street and just a very nice person says hello very nicely, and I said, oh, that's so good. So I just feel contented, at peace, at home in this world, settled, calm. For this day, it's pretty good. And then I go around the corner, and someone says, you know, Gil, you know that men who wear black pants are pretty lousy, pretty crummy. And, you know, I'm such a nice, calm state, relaxed, contented, happy. Very little Gil here, me here. So I kind of like, oh, that's an interesting thing for someone to say. I wonder what was going on for them. It didn't really affect me. I just keep going. A different day, you know, if that day when I was 14, if that girl had said, boy is wearing black pants, is, you know, crummy, and I was wearing black pants, I probably would have thought about it for the next 3 days. You know. The big thing I did with her, the only thing I really remember, I only remember two things from this girl. One was, you know, searching for her on the phone and the telephone books. The other was when I'd met her a little bit, and we were on the streets, and so I wanted to impress her. And so somehow there were cigarettes involved. So I was going to smoke a cigarette, but I'd never smoked a cigarette before. So I didn't know how to get it lit. So my attempts did not impress her. And then I felt kind of crushed, you know, and that's the end of the world, and this is, you know, not a good thing. So what impacts us when we're 14 is we have a particular state and concerns that, and probably you're a little different than when you were 14 now. Probably your state of mind is such that things that bothered you when you were 14 probably, you know, probably doesn't affect you too much anymore. Some of them. No? You're shaking your head? So, anyway, I hope that what I had to say tonight was useful or gave you food for thought. And more importantly, food for investigation. Kind of really see, look more carefully in yourself and what your relationship to thinking is, how thinking works, how you get pulled into them. And can you find a way to practice wow, to step back and really step back and look at them with a kind of broad perspective. So you're not living in the thoughts. You're more living in awareness of the thoughts. And when you're doing that, then you'll be able to figure out for yourself how it works for you, all this. It's a wonderful thing to do. Great. Thank you.